right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're talking about one that just hit Amazon Prime. It's called The Vast of Night. I know this played at a few drive-ins around the country. I'm not sure if this was ever planned for any kind of major theatrical release, but it actually is one of my favorite things I've seen this year. I'm really excited to talk about it. Joining me for the conversation is Bea Garner. She's been on the show a bunch of times in the past, but it's been a while, so I'm really glad to have her back. And I'm excited to talk about this movie. It was a very kind of out of nowhere surprise for me, and I'm looking forward to talking about it. So before we do get into that conversation, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And, of course, you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. By the way, we're going to have some really cool contests coming up real soon. So definitely make sure to follow us on all those social media things, because that's how you're going to find out about these contests, aren't you? So, as always, thank you so much, everybody out there who's been listening to the show. We've had so much great feedback lately, and I just really appreciate it that you're all out there listening. So let's jump into this conversation about The Vast of Night. If you haven't yet, make sure you watch the movie, because it's on Amazon Prime and it's great. So go watch The Vast of Night and let's get into this conversation. All right, so back on the show with us today, we've got Bea Garner coming back. It's been a while. Bea, how you doing?
Yeah, it has been a while. Lots have happened since I was last on.
Sure has. That is for sure. How have you been doing? How have you been passing the time?
Well, mostly I've been passing the time by watching loads of movies.
Nice.
That I haven't seen before. So loads of classic movies that I've been meaning to watch but never got around to watching.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen stuff like Stagecoach. I watched Tokyo Story the other day. Just loads of classic movies that I've just never found the time to watch, and now I have the time.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse.
Yeah, that's kind of been me too. Not as many of the old classics, although a few, but definitely just filling in my day with just tons of movies that I've missed over the years, and it's been an interesting time, let's put it that way. But today we are talking about a great new movie that is coming out on Amazon Prime. By the time this goes up, it will have just come out the other day. It's called The Vast of Night, and I don't know about you, but for me, this kind of came out of nowhere. This is I was really surprised by this one, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I caught this last year at the Edinburgh Film Festival. I wasn't really it's always odd when you go to film festivals, because there's never really that much information about the films that are shown, so I was a bit apprehensive about going in. I was like, oh, I don't know, this sounds like something I've seen before. But I really, really found the film so engaging and so well shot and beautifully lit, and the cinematography is one of the best I've seen. And I found the story really compelling. And this, it was just so well done. And I thought it was one of the best films I saw at the actual festival in the whole.
That's awesome. Yeah, this feels like the kind of movie that you walk away from a film festival like just talking about to everybody, and just like just singing its praises the whole time. And then it just kind of like, you know, just like sneaks its way into release, and it's like just out of nowhere, there it is. But I'm glad that, you know, it's out there now, and I'm hoping that it really connects and people really see it. But why don't we jump into talking about some puzzle pieces? What do you got for your first piece?
Okay, so it's a bit of an odd first piece, but so basically the film opens with that wonderful opening tracking shot where we're sort of follow the characters around in the school, and it goes on for quite a length of time. And it's just so well done. It made me think of other films that have done that, where they've just followed characters for such a long length of time and let you sort of see the world, and it sets the tone and the atmosphere for the rest of the movie. So the examples that I've chosen, I've gone for Goodfellas, that wonderful tracking shot that we see where they go through the club and you see everybody sort of interacting with everyone else, and it's just this flow of energy and action throughout.
Sure.
I know it's a bit of an odd one, but it's
no, really, it's, I love it.
It's not really about, like, in terms of themes or genre, they're completely different genres. It's more to do with the technical aspect of cinematography.
Right.
And I've also want to give a special mention to Touch of Evil, the Orson Welles film, which is probably not the first one to do it, but is probably one of the most recognizable ones to have done something like this, this long, continuous tracking shot. And also The Player, which is a great 10-minute opening where you just follow the main characters, you pick up on all the conversations, and it really sets the tone and the sort of the rest of the movie introduces everything that you need to know. And I think The Vast of Night does this as well. It's really well done in setting up who's who, how the characters are going to interact with each other, and building on that sort of small town atmosphere that you have. And I think it's such a well done, it's really hard to pull off a great tracking shot,
sure,
especially a continuous one. So I really admire the filmmakers for doing this and doing it so well and really setting the scene for the rest of the movie to take place. I mean, it's a, such a, it's so hard to get the right way to bring in the audience, to find to pull them in,
yeah,
into this, into a world that you've created. And I think of some of the greatest openings that you have, whether it's Psycho, whether it is something like Touch of Evil, they all do something with the camera of pulling you into this world in which the film takes place. And The Vast of Night does that splendidly.
Absolutely.
Does it so well. So I thought I would just start at the very beginning,
sure,
of the film.
And you know, I love that whole opening tracking shot. It's so cool. And I love those pieces, using those as references. But another thing I love about it is how it pulls you in. It tells you so much about the characters, but so little about what's going to happen at the same time, which is, it just adds to this mystery of the whole thing. And it's like, it really sets you up. It gives you such a sense of this town, of the people. But I, you know, I went into this thing, I hadn't actually seen a trailer. I just ended up watching it just, you know, just like this. And I had no clue where it was going to go at any given moment during any of that opening tracking shot. And I'm like, wait, where is this taking me? You know, but it does it so well that it's like, you're just totally along for the ride. And by the time, you know, it gets into the next scene, you already know these people and you know this town so well.
It's really well done. And like you say, I think it's best not watching a trailer or really listening to anything prior to going into this movie.
For sure.
Anyone who's listening to this episode,
yeah,
and hasn't watched a movie,
pause right now.
Yeah.
We will be here when you get back, we promise.
Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
So I will I'll jump into my first piece, and so I think the one I wanted to start out with is basically, and I'm also going to use a few things put together for this one, really a whole style, and that is a very kind of Tarantino style in the dialogue. And the reason why I felt that is because the gist of this movie is basically these long, very talky, but like constantly riveting conversations that are just, they're like peppered with a really great amount of tension, with you know, little bits of humor here and there, really interesting characters who you really get such an incredible sense of through these conversations, and the mystery just plays out so naturally as they're just, you know, having these long drawn out conversations that never ever get boring. And that is something that I, when I think of, you know, the thing that Tarantino does best, I mean, that's really it. When you think of scenes like, you know, the basement scene in Inglourious Basterds, or you think of, you know, any of his major conversation based scenes, the Samuel L. Jackson and in Pulp Fiction, you think of all these scenes where it's mainly you're watching this conversation unfold that is just absolutely riveting, and you're just hanging on every word, and it comes down to incredible writing. And this the writers of this movie, their first time out with a feature, was it James Montague and Craig W. Sanger, and as well as first time director Andrew Patterson, being able to wrangle that into something that is so interesting and so fun to watch, really, is really impressive, I think, in a way that I would basically say the same thing about a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, that's a really good point to make. I think there's a fluidity of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it flows very naturally,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't feel scripted. And that's kind of with Tarantino, obviously everything is scripted. He's one of those screenwriters that I think he says that he writes his screenplays are like novels or something.
Mm-hmm.
He goes overboard with everything. But he has an ear for dialogue.
Yeah.
And he applies that to his screenwriting and to, to his films. And I think that's what we get here. Like, it feels very authentic for its time setting.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel cliched in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, it just... But at the same time, they're not using terminology that is our time, our contemporary time. So you do feel like it is there's a believability. This is a world that exists in this time setting, in this time period, and these characters belong to that time setting. So it's very well done, and I think that's a really good comparison to make with Tarantino.
Right on. Yeah, I just wanted to point out real quick before we move to the next piece, my favorite little bit of dialogue in this whole movie was towards the end, not to jump around so much in the movie itself, but when they go to visit the old lady and she's speaking in that foreign language, and it sounds kind of spooky as they're walking in, and Everett asks, "Can I ask what you were just saying? That was very alarming." And just like, what a great way to put it. That is so freaking creepy. I just love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how we would react, I suppose.
Totally. Yeah.
In that same sense.
Exactly. So, what do you got for your next piece?
So the film's set in the 1950s. So I was thinking just the sort of creature feature invasion. Sci-fi films that came out in the 50s, so War of the Worlds, mm-hmm. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and Earth versus Flying Saucers.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those type of films, there isn't really one in particular, I guess that really springs to mind. I guess Invasion of the Body Snatchers is maybe close to it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the small town setting.
Sure.
Because the other films, they take place in more of a worldwide setting on a bigger scale, whereas Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a much smaller location where everything takes place. But I like that idea of how Vast and Night brings it to a smaller scale.
Sure.
That makes it feel more personal to me,
mm-hmm.
because it's not taking place in, you know, a major metropolis like New York or, you know, Washington or San Francisco. It's just happening in any town, any place. It doesn't have to just be America. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
But I've just thought of all those films from the 1950s which picked up on like the paranoia of communism and
sure.
the Red Scare.
Mm-hmm.
And then use that to also work in what was becoming quite popular at the time, which was, you know, science fiction, aliens and UFOs, and really sort of entwining that with stuff that was happening on a much deeper level in terms of what's happening in with the Cold War,
yeah.
and everything. So
I love how sure Everett is that it's Russia. Like,
yeah,
it's just totally.
It's always Russia. Yeah.
That's great.
So they're up to no good, those Ruskies. But yeah, I thought of those. There's probably like listeners of can think of lots of more examples, but those were the main ones that came to mind while watching this film.
Absolutely. And yeah, I had War of the Worlds on my list as well. And by the way, did you notice what the name of the radio station was?
What was the name of the radio station again? Sorry.
WOTW Radio.
Oh, I love that. That's nice.
That's awesome, right?
That is so clever. I like little in-jokes like that.
Yeah, totally. I do too. That's great. All right, so I'll go to my next piece then. I think, you know what? I was going to go to a different one, but I'm gonna skip around a little bit because you were just talking about how it's more of a personal story and how that, you know, really helps to make this movie stand out rather than being like one of these, you know, giant alien invasion kind of stories. And speaking to that whole personal level of it, this one might seem a little just, you know, out of left field a little bit, but I was reminded because... Now, with these central two characters, Faye and Everett, it's not really a love story, even though there's you know, certainly I think a little bit of an attraction there between the two of them. But I was reminded a little bit of the Before trilogy, the Richard Linklater trilogy with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, just because you're spending this day with these two characters who are just like kind of getting to know each other and having these just real natural, you know, conversations, and just you're really like getting into their relationship between the two of them. And it's certainly a different kind of movie with different things on its mind, but I just felt that that kind of natural, very real relationship between the two of them, and just the way that they're just kind of going about their day and having that conversation as they go about their day, it reminded me of the interactions between the two of them in the Before trilogy.
Yeah, there's that intimacy between the two.
Yeah,
and we are also, you know, privileged in the sense that we get to experience it with them.
Yeah.
So we get to know the characters when they sort of learn about each other. And it feels very sort of, I don't know, I don't want to use the word precious, but it feels very something sacred about it, that we've been given this access to know about these characters and watch them unfold and talk about their fears and anxieties. It feels very, very close to them in a way that you don't really get with, you know, those big films. I'm thinking of like Spielberg's War of the Worlds, where everything's on an epic scale and it's all...
Of course, yeah.
You know, it's all just rush, rush, rush. Here it's just slowly unfolding, and it's really sort of quite beautiful to watch in that regard.
Absolutely. So what do you got for your next piece?
I'm sticking with like the small town sort of setting. I'm going for The Fog. The horror film from the 80s. I cannot remember for the life of me what I want to say. 1980. Oh gosh, I'm gonna be completely wrong, aren't I? 1980
on the dot.
80.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I did not realize it was that old. I love this film. The John Carpenter sort of film of a small town. You've got the radio announcer, Stevie, who is played by Adrian Barbeau, I believe.
Sounds right.
Where it's this mysterious fog coming in, and I thought it was quite interesting that you've got the comparisons of the small town setting and also the radio station and this mysterious outside threat coming in to, you know, potentially harm people that the main characters love.
Mm-hmm.
And also that in terms of the mood and atmosphere as well, because The Fog starts off, you know, it's got the supernatural, it's got the special effects, but it's also got a lot of comedy in that film, and I think we get the same sort of comedic tones here as well. Like it's, you know, starts off rather lighthearted, mm-hmm. and like you say, with the dialogue, there's a lot of banter and back and forth, sort of jokiness to the characters. And yeah, The Fog's a really underappreciated horror film.
For sure.
I think it's one of, when you think of like all the 80s horror films, I think it's one of those ones that just gets missed off the list.
Yeah,
especially with John Carpenter, you just think of his other films like Halloween. So
I've actually been on a bit of a John Carpenter kick, and that's one that I need to rewatch. I haven't seen it in probably 20 plus years at least.
Oh wow. Yeah, definitely. I love like his work in the 80s. It's just all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
They Live, you've got like
Just watched
Big
They
Trouble
Live last
China.
Week. Yeah.
Oh wow.
It was awesome. Well, I love that. I love bringing up the Fog as a puzzle piece. That's great. And I will go on to another piece, and that is The Twilight Zone, which I think the whole thing, it even is kind of framed as an episode of a kind of a Twilight Zone kind of thing, the Paradox Theater. And I do wish that they went into that a little more. I wish that maybe we saw little clips of other shows or something at some point. But it is a fun way to set up this kind of a story and, you know, continue it like on another level, adding to the atmosphere of this thing, of the kind of movie this is and the kind of movies that it's emulating. I think using that whole Twilight Zone framing device really helps with that.
Yeah, I wonder if they will do like a trilogy or something, and maybe have that like each film is a different episode of
it. I like that.
That could be quite exciting.
Yeah, this could be like the new Cloverfield after they ruined it all with Paradox. They could do a whole new anthology sci-fi movie series. That'd be great.
Have you got a favorite Twilight episode?
Oh man, what I know. My fiance had me watch recently the one with the guy on the wing or something like that.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, is that the one where he's in the aeroplane and there's like a creature on the wing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or something like that? Or am I thinking... I just kind of start thinking about the Simpsons episode where Bart's on the school
nice.
Bus. Nice. That's... My introduction to The Twilight Zone was through The Simpsons, so...
I think it was for a lot of people our ages.
Yeah, that's true.
That's funny.
It's funny that you mentioned Cloverfield, because that is one of my puzzle pieces.
Nice! Let's do it. I love talking about Cloverfield.
Yeah, I thought, in terms of the invasion, the sort of... this side, and also following, like, a small group of people,
mm-hmm.
For what I believe kind of realistically plays out in real time,
mm-hmm.
although that, you know, there's, it's not real time, but
sure.
There's that idea of everything being told from a first-hand perspective, although we don't have that here with The Vast and the Night. We still get the sort of events playing out in real time and the characters sort of being cut off from the world and sort of not knowing how to react. And I think that's what we get perfectly in Cloverfield. And like you said, I mean, it's a shame that the other Cloverfield movie, I mean, I like is it the second one?
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane is also great. Yeah, that's a great movie too. I love those first two so much. It's just the third one that just kind of...
I tried watching it and it just didn't make any sense because it didn't feel like anything like Cloverfield.
Mm-hmm.
But the original film and the, you know, the sort of spirited sequel do have that sort of wonderful build up of tension. And I think that's what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
You get that sort of wonderful snowballing effect where things get bigger and bigger and out of control, and you begin to learn more and more, and it all sort of becomes something inescapable, and then the characters are, you know, facing in this situation where there's really no escape from what's going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like how we sort of go on this journey with them and we're sort of seeing everything from their perspective. So yeah, I thought Cloverfield, because Yeah, I think the first Cloverfield is a film that maybe people should go and revisit now, especially with everything that's going on. Or maybe not. Maybe it'd be too anxiety inducing. Right.
Well, that's a funny thing. I hadn't thought of including Cloverfield. I'm glad you brought it up. But another parallel, I think, is telling a kind of sci-fi story that we've seen before, but in such a different way. I think is another parallel with The Vasta Knight.
Yeah, I like films that do that. That take us sort of a premise that we've seen a thousand times before, and thinks, what's a different way to tell this story? And I'm so glad that I actually went and watched this film at the festival and didn't get put off by the really sort of two line description.
Yeah.
In the brochure,
yeah.
Which didn't do it justice.
Nice. So I'll go on to my next piece, and I'm actually going to combine a couple here, two specific scenes, and I have one piece for each of those two scenes. And the first one, they're both kind of transitional scenes in the movie. The first one, there's a moment where we get this first person fly through the town, and it. I've brought this up on the show a million times, but it reminded me of the Sam Raimi Evil Dead camera trick that he's so famous for, and where we're flying through the town and it's all first person view. And I love that. I think that's so cool. And the other one is, again, another transitional moment. It's when they're running at the end of the movie, and it's like a side shot of them running, and the camera is kind of focused on their legs moving as they're running. And it almost reminded me of, like, on Scooby-Doo when they're running from place okay. to place, and you just see the legs going in the circle, you know that kind of thing. And it had a very cartoony kind of a feel to it, and I just loved that. I got a kick out of it when they were running in that way, and I thought it just added so much to that moment, to where it's like, it's not just them running, it's them running in a way that's just like oh wow, they're going there, they're really just amping this thing up in such a great way.
It's like the strangest puzzle piece I think you've ever given, Scooby-Doo.
Hell yeah. I love it.
I love that, actually. I do get the Scooby-Doo sort of vibes from this, you know, like it's this mystery, this small town, and it's kind of fun in that regard. But now I'm just thinking that I wish I'd come up with Scooby-Doo, because that's like the best puzzle piece ever.
Yes.
I love Scooby-Doo so much.
He is the best. I love him so much. I still haven't seen Scoob, though. I've heard bad things, unfortunately, but
yeah, I'm really, really worried about watching it. I don't think I'll watch it until it comes down in price, because it's so expensive at the moment. And from what I read from people, I'm like, nah, I'll rather just hold on to my money for the time being. But you're never gonna beat like the 2002 live action Scooby-Doo, you know,
with it's so true,
Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's the best. I mean, and it was written by was it written by James Gunn, I think?
It was. You know, I could totally see, with the success of all the Release the Snyder Cut stuff, I could see fans coming together and trying to get a sequel to with the original cast from the live-action movies of Scooby-Doo. I can picture that happening now.
Yeah, that's what they need. Like, when they're slightly older, you know, they've outgrown even though they weren't teenagers. But you know what I mean? Like, I want that to happen. So if anyone's listening, like, we want to Scooby-Doo 3, because there's a sequel as well, which is Monsters Unleashed. I know so much about these two movies. It's a bit...
You do. I'm impressed by that.
I just watched them so many I had younger brothers and sisters growing up, and they just watched those movies on repeat. That and Shrek. So I know every single line of dialogue. Anyway, that's embarrassing to admit.
Nothing wrong with that. Scooby-Doo rules. But what do you got for your next piece?
So I'm going with Super 8.
Nice.
You might have this on your list.
I didn't know. But now that you mention it, like, immediately, I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Super 8 is a really great film. I suppose you could also maybe throw in, like, Stranger Things into this as well. What I love about Super 8 is the way, you know, the small group of people that we have, the fact that it's set in, like, the late 70s or early 80s, and you have that sort of small town and then mystery that, you know, a small group of people have to unravel and discover what's actually happening. And it's just one of those films that sort of kind of just throws you into it, into the world. And I really love how it pays homage to those films of like the 1980s and 1970s, like E.T. And I think that's what The Vast of the Night is also doing. It's sort of paying homage to those types of movies and of the 1950s, but also doing something that's unique and bringing it to a modern day audience, which I think J.J. Abrams did quite well with Super 8.
Yeah, still his best movie, I think.
Oh yeah, I mean, what else has he done? I mean, yeah. Star Wars: Rise of Skywalker. No.
No, thank you. Well, I'll continue on with my next piece, which, again, you know, just you're talking about that small town feel, the 1960s, all the, this was 1950s, I believe, right? But I was thinking of American Graffiti, another movie that just so expertly, like, captures its specific time frame and, like, kind of brings you into it, and the music and the people and the way they talk and dress and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I just thought it does a similar thing like that in transporting you back.
Yeah, and I like the fact that it's directed by George Lucas.
Totally.
So you've got that Star Wars space sort of connection there.
Exactly.
Yeah, which was your intention. Right?
Definitely. That was why I was bringing it up. 100%. I knew you were going to bring up Rise of Skywalker, and I wanted to, like, you know, cleanse the palate in the room for Star Wars fans out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, so.
American Graffiti is a film that I've watched ages ago, and I really want to rewatch it now that I can appreciate film better, because I watched it when I was, like, you know, youngish and just not interested in, like, movies all that much. So
sure,
I know it's like, got, when you look through, like, who's in it, there's just, like, everybody is in that movie who went on to have, like,
oh yeah,
great careers, like Ron Howard, Harrison Ford. Oh my gosh, it's like their showreel from the 1970s.
Absolutely, yeah, incredible. And I haven't seen it in many years either, but yeah, it is. That cast is crazy. So I only have one more piece. What do you got next?
So I've got one more film.
Okay.
And then I wanted to tell you some urban legends.
Okay.
But they relate to UFOs and aliens.
And Scooby-Doo. So
no Scooby-Doo, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But you can believe that maybe Scooby-Doo was involved if it makes you happy.
Nice. So what's your last film piece, though?
So this kind of relates to Super 8 and also relates to 1970s films. This is Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind from 1977, which I personally prefer over Jaws. I suppose you could also have Jaws in here because that's a small town. But I like Close Encounters of the Third Kind because I just find it a far more compelling story, and this idea of, like, becoming obsessed with something and I always love that bit where he's building the mountain out of the mashed potato. And then I always find that such a lovely little touch. And I love, like, the use of music in the film. And I think the music here is also quite great.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking of the endings to these two movies are kind of similar in that regards of making contact with the aliens. And yeah, Close Encounters is one of those films that I think it gets better with age. And I, you know, when I think of Spielberg, I mean, it's the first film that pops into my mind. I know it's very easy to think of like E.T., we can think of like Indiana Jones, Schindler's List, Jurassic Park, but that's always one that I think about. And I think it's also his films always have very personal moments in them. But I think that like this idea of obsession and fatherhood and the relationship between father and son is really explored quite well here, and also in Jaws as well. But yeah, I really like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and it's personally one of my favorite Spielberg.
They just had a couple of years ago, they had a theatrical re-release. I got to see it in the theater. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was like a 4K reissue or something like that.
Oh, on like the hugest widescreen as possible.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Nice.
Right on. Well, yeah, I love that as a piece, though. I definitely think there's a lot of parallels there. And, you know, especially like you said, the ending, it totally makes sense. The small town feel, you know, just Spielberg in general, it totally makes sense for the kind of feel that The Vast of Night seems to be going for. So my last piece, I think, will lead really well into some of these folktales you're going to tell us, because it's the X-Files, the TV show, and, which I know drew a lot of inspiration for a lot of its stories from a lot of, you know, various little tales and ghost stories that have gone around throughout the ages. They used a lot of that to work into the writing, so I'm sure there's a possibility that something you're going to bring up here might have even been used for an X-Files episode at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the X-Files, like, as a 90s kid. I was always so scared of watching it as well, though. I could never really watch a full episode without being scared and, like, holding a cushion to my face. Well, should we get into these, like, stories?
I think that's a great idea.
I feel like I topped myself, because last time with the lighthouse, I told a story about the abandoned lighthouse on the Scottish Isles. Now I've got a couple of different stories which I sort of want to discuss.
All right, I'm ready.
So I hopefully these aren't too scary. So there is a radio show called the Art Bell Radio Show, and in 1997 he had, you know, like all radio shows do, he had a phone in where people can call up and talk about topics. You know how it is, you get certain people who come on and, you know, they can be quite not, there's some screws loose.
Sure.
You know, anyway, he had this one man call. And he seemed very stressed, very anxious. He wanted to tell his story about how he used to work for Area 51. Now, you can actually go and listen to the recording of that radio program. What he is, how he's coming across and what the stuff that he's saying, like he worked for the military for many, many years. He genuinely sounds panicky and scared, gets cut off towards the end of his call, but he doesn't seem like someone who's just making it up, unless he's rehearsed it very well and he's, you know, a very good actor. It seems very legitimate, and I think that's we get that here with Vast of the Night, with the call-ins and this the character seeing mysterious lights and the incident with UFOs. And it just made me think of that. I remember reading about it on Reddit and then listening to the actual recording and thinking, oh, that does sound, you know, that person really does believe what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've heard of that before.
I have heard of that story. Yeah, that's such a big, like, legendary story in that kind of, you know, spooky tales kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah, I find it really fascinating because it's like you just don't expect that when you're on a radio show.
Sure.
You know, I wondered what my reaction would be if someone called me up and I was doing a radio show and they were claiming to, you know, work for Area 51. I don't know how I would react, but he genuinely sounds so scared and panicky. And, you know, I hope that he is safe and well. And if he was having any sort of, suffering from any mental illness or delusions, I hope he's got the help that he needs. But yeah, I can only imagine what it would have been like for the radio presenter to have that situation come up. So that's one that I thought really ties into The Vast of the Night quite well.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the next one, it also happened in 1997. I mean, clearly 97 was a crazy year for like aliens and UFO experiences. I don't know what was happening in 97. I wanted to talk about the Phoenix Lights, which were these big triangular formation of lights that passed over Phoenix, Arizona. And it wasn't just a case of like a couple of people saw it, like hundreds, if not like 1,000 people all saw these lights, you know, acting in a very strange way, traveling across the sky. And there's footage of it. And to this day, nobody knows what caused it. Although there's been, you know, people said it's the military. They were dropping flares and you're testing.
It's always one of those things.
Experimental. aircraft. So I thought that was interesting, this idea of something happening and not having it like a solid explanation for it, and just experiencing something and happening at night and not knowing what's going on. I think it's really interesting that both of those things happened in 97. I just realized that now.
I know, right?
Yeah, maybe there'll be a sequel to Vast of the Night where they do have something set in 97. You could get that 90s retro vibe in there, maybe.
Yeah, this director certainly will know how to capture it.
Yeah, I hope so. but I thought I'd give a little special mention to the Roswell incident as well, because, you know, that was the one that birthed everything. So,
totally.
Yeah. Although that's probably fake. Or is it?
Or is
Who
it?
Who knows?
I have this feeling, B, that you're going to start a Supernatural Stories podcast pretty soon.
Maybe. That'd be so much fun. I would love to do that. I just find it interesting that these stories come up. And sometimes, like, real life is more mysterious than actual anything that can happen in film.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, I will go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and then we'll get to any closing thoughts on The Vast of Night. So we talked about Goodfellas, Touch of Evil, The Player, Tarantino movies, War of the Worlds, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Before Trilogy, The Fog, The Twilight Zone, Cloverfield, Evil Dead, Scooby-Doo, Super 8, American Graffiti, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The X-Files, and then you told us some great spooky alien stories that that have been going on in the radio and in the rest of the world, which I think absolutely were inspirations for this movie, no question. I think definitely makes sense as puzzle pieces here. So do you have any other closing thoughts about the movie that we didn't really get to?
The only thing I would like to know is whether people listening have had crazy alien encounters.
Good question.
That would be exciting. Like, but no, I really like this film. And I'm just glad that it's now coming to Amazon and people are going to have a chance to see it. I think it's so often that you have indie films that show at film festivals and they don't get picked up for distribution. And it's a real shame. And luckily that, you know, this one has been picked up. And I really hope that people do seek it out and give it a watch, because it's such a great movie. And I really can't wait to see what the director does next.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that too. To come out the gate with something like this is really, really quite an accomplishment, I think. And I do think this is going to get like a bit of a cult status kind of thing going on, and people are just going to be like telling each other about it, you know, you got to see this movie, you know. And so hopefully it gets its audience.
I hope so.
Yeah. And what one other closing thought I wanted to mention, you mentioned just a minute ago for people to send in their own alien stories. And I think that is such a great idea. Not that anybody ever writes in, but if you're out there listening and you want to write in with your alien story, B and I will do a special episode reading them and talking about what puzzle pieces their stories have. How about that?
Yeah, definitely. I'll share my own experience about that as well. If you want to hear my own sort of encounter with the paranormal / alien UFO, let me know and I'll share it,
because I want to hear story. That no matter how many people write in, I want to at least hear yours, let's put it that way. So
okay, all right, it will give you nightmares, let's just say.
I'm very scary. I'm ready. Well, I think we covered the vast of night. B, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of movies at the moment. So let me just because it's been one of those, I mean, this month alone, I've watched a movie like pretty much every single day. but I really wanted to mention how much I like Blowout. The 1981 film from Brian De Palma, starring John Travolta, and it's all about a conspiracy with a politician being assassinated, and John Travolta's a sound man and he records something and has to piece it all together, which I found really interesting, engaging movie. It's brilliant to listen to watch with headphones on, because you hear every little sound and makes a perfect experience if you're looking for something to watch. And I'll give another shout out to a quick film that I watched, which was another indie film called Murder Death Career Town, which was this found footage movie about a man's investigation into a crime that takes place in his neighborhood. And it becomes more about his sort of obsession with trying to solve this murder, but this might not be a murder. And there's all these strange people involved in it. And it's a great movie that you can rent on Amazon now. So I really thought that was a movie that, like Fast of Night, I was not expecting much, but when I watched it, I was blown away by it. So yeah, it's definitely a film that I would like to give a special shout out to, because it was just really good.
It sounds really interesting. I hadn't heard of it. I will have to check that out. And that Blowout sounds great too. I haven't seen it, but I love the idea of it. Sounds great.
Oh yeah, it's really good. I mean, and John Travolta acting and not just being awful, it's always so, you know, you forget that he used to be a very good actor and now does weird films like Battlefield Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody posted on Twitter the other day about like, what's the last John Travolta movie you saw in the theater? And it's like, it kind of blew my mind. Like, it's been like 20 something years since he's had a good movie that opened in wide release and like everybody saw it.
I know. It's really tragic, isn't it? It's
crazy.
I mean, he's had a comeback before. So maybe you have a comeback now. I don't know though.
Let's hope so. Well, B, why don't you tell people where they can find you and your work online?
Yep. So I run the website In Their Own League, which is primarily focused on female filmmakers and women in film. So you can always check out not just my work, but the work of all our team who do an amazing job over at www.intheirownleague.com. You can also find me over on Twitter at the Film B. That's just B, the letter B. And I write for various sites. I'm currently doing a B Goes West series for In Session Film, which is where I explore Westerns because I've never really watched many Westerns before. So I thought I will step outside my comfort zone and try those films out. And it's actually been quite good. I've enjoyed quite a lot of them that I've seen so far. So yeah, that'd be exciting. To follow me on that journey.
Awesome. Yeah, the Westerns are a tricky thing. They're like a genre that I'm never like jumping to go see, you know, like when one pops up. But whenever I watch one, I tend to like them. So
yeah,
I probably should watch more.
I'm the same. I like, we don't really have, it's not really a big thing over here. We never really had, the Wild West didn't happen. So I've never really been that interested in it. But I thought I would give them a go, and I've watched some really good films so far. So, yeah, maybe I'll turn into a Western fan by the end of this.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Bea, thank you so much for being here and for doing this again. I'm glad to finally have you back on the show, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Me too. I look forward to us having our spooky story session.
That I want to do it. We got to do it.
Yeah.
People, write in with your story so we have something to talk about.
Testing. Can anyone hear me? My name is Toby. I'm one of the hosts of the Secret Transmission Podcast. We do a satire show all about conspiracies, UFOs, the paranormal, cryptozoology, true crime, and much more. Our show was transmitted to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and many other podcast apps.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
Secret Transpod. We hope you
come listen to us
try to explain the unexplainable.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Vast of Night. If you haven't yet, make sure to go watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. And I included that promo for Secret Transmission Podcast because it is a good fit for the theme of The Vast of Night. But I am hoping to get some new promos from other podcasters. So if you're a podcaster yourself and you're listening to this, get in touch with me. I would be happy to play a promo for your show. I always swap them out every episode, play an ad that, you know, not always has anything to do with the content of this particular episode. Sometimes I'm just squeezing in whatever podcast promo I've got in the folder there ready to insert into the episode. But I like promoting other podcasters. So, you know, get in touch, send me your ads. I am happy to play them on the show. And also, please do get in touch just as listeners if you've got an alien story to send for me and B to break down and put some puzzle pieces to. I think that would be a really fun special episode if we get enough submissions. I am super down to do it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So get in touch with us. You can email me directly by davidrosen@gmail.com or just get in touch on social media at PiecingPod. And we've also got the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces Facebook group where you can get in touch with me on there as well. So definitely get in touch. Check out our website, piecingpod.com. I've been starting to do a little bit of a redesign with it, but there's going to be a lot more redesigning in the future coming up real soon. I want to start adding some more features to the website. And as we start doing some contests and stuff like that, a lot of that's going to happen on the website too. So check out piecingpod.com. And thank you to Bea for joining me for this episode. And thank you to you for listening. If you enjoy what we're doing, you can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And you can also sign up for our Patreon, where we post advance early access to some of our episodes before they go up on the main feed. And we're planning on recording lots of bonus content in the coming months. And you can get some special exclusive music that I'm going to be posting on there really soon. You guys know I always close out the episodes with some music, and I'm going to do that in a second. But I figure this is a good time as any to tell you that I am so productive right now with the amount of music I've been working on. I am going to have a lot of stuff to release soon, and definitely some of that is going to end up on the Patreon first as a special bonus thing. But coming up this weekend, it is on June 6th, is the Cyber Shorts VR Film Festival, and I just wanted to give a quick shout out to that. They are going to be, as part of their festival, premiering my next music video for a track called Multiply. It's not a virtual reality video, although I have had virtual reality videos. Those of you who have followed my music career know that. But it's a virtual reality film festival, playing the videos in virtual reality, and we'll be doing a Q&A in virtual reality. And so I will be a part of that. That's coming up on Saturday, June 6th. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go check that out. But I believe it's free to join. You just have to, you know, have a headset and click the link and download the app and do all that stuff. You should check it out. It's going to be the only chance to check out Multiply until I actually release it. I'm not going to release it until my next album's ready to release. So if you want to see this thing, it's a really cool video. It's directed by this guy, Tobias Steiner, who made my Butterfly video a few years ago. This video is super cool, and I'm really excited to release it, but it's not going to come out for a while still, so this is going to be your only chance to check it out. So make sure to check out the Cyber Shorts Film Festival, and like I said, link will be in the show notes. So I am going to close this thing out with a piece of music, and maybe I'll play Multiply one of these days, but for now, though, I got to play Lights in the Sky. This is one of my most popular tracks, and it fits so perfectly with the Vast of Night theme. So I think it's a perfect track to close this thing out on. So this is Lights in the Sky, which also has a really cool music video. It was my first video that I ever put out. I actually made it myself using public domain footage. And so you can check that out on my YouTube channel. And the song itself is on my first album, Echoes in the Dark. So this is Lights in the Sky. Thank you, as always, for listening. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon. We'll be right back.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.